At Quite the Thing Media, we aim to bring you the best podcasts produced by independent creators, made without constraints.
Hello, friends, and you are our friends. This is the Taxman from Grappling with Canada, and you have it locked into the Indie Podcaster, shining a spotlight on all those podcasts ready to saturate, permeate, and infiltrate your auditory senses. Now on to your friend and mine, the podcast father.
You've been searching for a podcast. Want to know about some great artist? Yeah. You've come to the right place. Indie Podcaster with your host, the podcast father.
Welcome to another month and another episode of Indie Podcaster. I'm your host, Jeff, a.k.a. Podcast Father. Joining me is the man, the myth, the legend, Larry Bird's cousin from Boston, Massachusetts, Tim McCarthy.
Hey.
I say Boston, Massachusetts because my grandma used to argue with me and say, that is how you pronounce it, Massachusetts.
That sounds like the tooth hurdy joke when you go, hey, what time's my dentist appointment? Tooth hurdy? Classic. I've never heard that, but yeah, you got to have the accent with it. If people don't know I'm from Boston, Massachusetts, I think you can tell by now. But podcast father, blessed to be here, my friend.
Oh, I'm glad to have you. So Tim has a podcast, 2010 Minutes. Why don't you tell us about it for a minute? I love this podcast. Yeah.
Thank you. Appreciate it, man. 2010 Minutes, hosted by me. It focuses on mental health through humor, insight, and personal stories. I do it for roughly 20 minutes for two reasons. I have ADHD, so I can't pay attention that long and talk to myself for that long. And two, I'm actually not big into podcasts, so I don't know why I'm here.
He's just an entertainer. I do love your podcast because I've never really been open about the depression. This will be the first time I've actually ever mentioned it. And all the years I've created content, audio content, but I've never really been open or shared the fact that I've battled depression for a long time. And the way you do it with such ease and then I don't want to say make it fun because it's not fun, but you're comedic about it. You're honest about it and it makes it comfortable.
I really appreciate that. It's funny because I was always sitting in the dark with the two and I would always wear this mask. So I didn't show people I was depressed like a lot of people do. And then I found out there was people that were just as sad as me or even worse. So I was like, oh man, there are people out there. So the more I like opened up about myself, a lot of people were like, oh, that's like me. And I was like, oh, there's like no one judging me. Like everyone kind of is on the same ship. They just don't know if they want to show their hands or not. So I'm like, oh, all right. I don't have to worry about anything. I can just say everything about me. I'll tell you like what drugs I have to take, what like I attempted suicide, like my thoughts that happened. And there's like no repercussions because everyone, most of the time, are like, yeah, I feel you.
Yeah, everyone make sure you check out his podcast, 2010 Minutes. It's also on YouTube. And I think that's pretty cool. I have not done a whole lot of really big and got, you know, over a million views on MySpace back in the day, but YouTube and hey, you're laughing. That was the shit, you know, forever.
It was,
but I have not done a whole lot of YouTube. So that's awesome how you're doing that. I think it's a good experience, especially when you're interviewing individuals. I mean, you get to see that interaction. It's great.
Yeah, no, I it was definitely a step I wanted to take. I'm not very well versed in the technology side of podcasting. I kind of just, look at everybody else and try to pick their brands, which the community is great. You would be in my top eight on MySpace for sure. I think you'd be in the one or two hole on my top eight. But yeah, the YouTube is really good. I didn't know this. Like people love watching YouTube. I thought people watch YouTube for like 2 minute clips. Again, this is my ADHD talking, but people like sit down and like watch full fledged interviews. Like I'll be at work and see someone watching like a YouTube of like a video game. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, just watching this guy play a video game. I'm like, what?
Anyway, so this is a really cool interview I'm going to share with you today. I got to interview Sarah Turney from Voices for Justice podcast. Just a quick backstory. Her sister, Alyssa, went missing in 2001. Sarah's been a huge advocate about that the whole time. Actually launched a podcast years ago to help get the word out about that. And even though her father was arrested in connection with that last year, and the trial date's up and coming, that's by no means the focus of this interview. However, we do talk about how kind of, you know, made her the person she is today and gave her the ability to create this great content that she does. And Yeah, I'll let Tim talk about it for a minute. She was able to use a certain social media platform also to kind of break through. And a lot of us podcasters haven't mastered that yet.
Yeah, the TikTok side of it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a new thing that I see happening a lot. Like just in general, I would watch it and be like, oh, this is like funny. But then now people are like legit putting things out there that are like helpful. Like even like that recent story with the woman that went missing with her fiance. It's like these social media platforms are very useful in a way. And to translate it to that, to help somebody like in need like her is very fascinating and very great. The internet can be so evil at times. But something like that, you're like, wow, this is using it for the greater good.
It's a fascinating story, and she's a fascinating person. And then you talk about success and breaking through as a podcaster. She, and we talk about this in an interview, recently got on with Spotify Podcast Network, Spotify exclusive new podcast she hosts, Disappearances. So that's like a podcaster's dream. That's huge.
Yeah, she turned what seemed to be like a negative in her life to a very big positive. So her sister would probably be really proud of her.
Yeah. And at one point I mentioned to her that I hear a lot of people say like, my podcast is my life. I'll be honest. My podcast is not my life. My podcast is something I enjoy doing. I enjoy highlighting all the sorts of things content creators are doing. It's by no means my life, but literally with her, it is her life.
Yeah, seriously. She pretty much put out like a help wanted poster, like on podcast form. Yeah, it's definitely a huge negative into a positive. Yeah, that is her life. She had to share her whole story.
Yeah, for the better good. Anyways, you guys will all love this interview. Let's go ahead and jump into it. But before we do that, I'm going to take care of a little business. Jeff here. I want to talk about a few things that keep this podcast going. If you like the work that I'm doing, I encourage you to share it with a friend. That really is the best way to spread the word about Indie Podcaster. I would love it if you would go to your favorite podcast listening platform, may it be a Apple or Good Pods, and leave me a rating. Throw me some stars if you would like. All that word of mouth and sharing and reviews of this podcast does help. This podcast and myself are proud member of Quite the Thing Media. Quite the Thing Media, podcasts that speak to you. Go check out all the great independent creators from around the world. It is a community-based podcast network, quitethethingmedia.com. If you want to check out my page, it's quitethethingmedia.com/podcastfather. You can request a review from me on site or submit a form to participate on this very podcast. PodPage is a proud sponsor of this podcast. PodPage is an amazing resource to build your podcast website. You want them big search engine hits. You want to be out there. You want to leave your mark in the digital world. And this website makes it extremely easy to do that. You can set up your podcast website in just a few minutes. Make sure you check it out, podpage.com. That's enough of all that. Let's jump into this awesome interview. Sarah, I am very excited about this interview this evening. Absolutely love your podcast. Well, podcasts now, right? So I'm excited to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I've got to chat with some really cool people while doing this podcast that I've started. And this is just another like one on the bucket list. So it's awesome that you took the time to do this.
Oh, you're so sweet. It's my pleasure.
I could go off on a tangent about how awesome you are, but there will be some people listening that maybe not a lot because you've really done very well, but some of them have not heard of you or your story. So I'm going to let you have the floor for a minute and just talk about, you know, we don't have to go into crazy detail on anything, but you definitely have a story that's inspired you to become a content creator.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I do think I'm a little unique in the true crime space in that I never really wanted to be here. You know, I have a missing sister. Her name's Alyssa Turney. And at a certain point in the investigation, the detectives told me, you know, your best chance to get a resolution for her case is to get media exposure. And I took that very seriously. So I went on this mission to try to have her story told by as many people as possible. And I was one of the fortunate ones in that there was an arrest made in her case in August of 2020. But like you mentioned, throughout that journey, I did become a content creator. I had, you know, asked so many people to cover her case. And along the way, so many of these amazing creators said, you know, why don't you create your own content? You tell this story better than anybody. You know this story better than anybody. Why don't you just tell it yourself? And I took that leap, and thank goodness it seems to have worked for me. So yeah, now I am definitely in the true crime space, just trying to pay it forward and help these other families. And like you said, I have two podcasts now, which is absolutely insane. If you would have told me that I would have had one podcast even a few years ago, I probably would have never believed you.
I just find it crazy because I hear some people say like my podcast is my life. And like, I'm not going to say like drives me nuts or makes me mad, but like, I'll be the first to tell you, my podcast is not my life. My family is my life, and they're separate things, right? For me, it's not even close. This is just something that I am passionate about. And I love chatting and highlighting all the great work that people like yourself are doing, but it's not my life. But in your case, in this unique situation, that term is not used lightly because it is part of your life and has been.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It was like my entire life. I learned so much about my own family as I went along through getting my sister's case records. And I mean, I have to say I had zero balance. You know, I worked a full-time job at 9 to 5, if not more, came home. I had a side business working on Etsy to help, you know, pay the bills. And then I did the podcast at night. I was working pretty much 24/7 on one project or another, but mostly my sister's case. You know, it overshadowed most of my entire life. I lost a lot of career opportunities. I basically lost my entire career for it, but I wouldn't change it for the world because now I get to do the same thing for other families. And that just means the world to me. I mean, as much as I want to say that my podcast isn't my life anymore, it very much still is. I mean, just Monday, I spoke with families for over 5 hours, and that's just on the phone talking to them and living in this space. It's just, I can't see it and not help.
So I don't want to go into too much information on your story, but it is unique. And I feel like it's something that that people listening are at least aware of the situation in limited details. They'll be able to find that obviously if they want to. So your sister goes missing in 2000, it's been 20 years, right?
Yeah, she went missing in 2001.
There are a lot of theories and thoughts out there that you were really torn between, because the individual that is being talked about is your father, and it was her stepfather. Talk to us about how much of a challenge it had to be. And like I said, it's not about the details to me, but what it is about is you started creating this content and you had to be super conflicted in some way. And I'll give you an example, because I absolutely love and adore your content you've created. You go back to episode number 1, Voices for Justice. Well, it's essentially a phone conversation with your father, the whole thing. How hard was it to create content like that, even though you knew it was for the better cause for your sister who was missing? How hard was it to create something like that and put it out there?
Yeah, I mean, it was a weird balance because on one hand, it seemed very black and white. The police told me to get media, so I got media. On the other hand, I gave up everything to make that podcast. I gave up all my siblings, the siblings that I had left, essentially. I gave up my career, like I mentioned. I, lost some job opportunities because of it. It was extremely difficult. None of it felt good, to be totally honest. And, you know, by the end of my podcast, I finally say that. You know, it wasn't until they did arrest my father that I came out and said, this entire experience was absolute hell. And I didn't want to say that because I was afraid that people wouldn't care anymore, or that they would think that I was ungrateful. But after that arrest was made, I felt all this freedom to be super honest and say I hated every second of making that podcast. It was so hard. It took so much time and was extremely emotionally draining. And to be honest, I feel like it should have never gotten to that point where I had to do that. I felt like I was forced to make it. And although I like to think I did a pretty good job in telling her story, I should have never had to do that. So it was extremely difficult. There's no reason why I should have had to give up basically my entire life for my sister. But here I am now. And, you know, at the end of the day, I am extremely grateful because so many people cared and they continue to care and they continue to care about these other cases now. So it's like one of the worst experiences I ever went through, but I can't say that I would change it now because now I'm going on to help other people. And the way that my sister's legacy lives on through that, I think is really beautiful. And I couldn't have really asked for a better resolution.
Amazing, Sarah. And just the leap of faith that you had to just encounter to just do it. and put it out there, because that episode in particular, episode number one, is just so raw and it's just there. You know what I mean? It's a very hard conversation to listen to. I can't even pretend like I know how difficult it is. And also, I know more details looking back at it as times passed, as more information come out. It had to be even more challenging beforehand. Like if I'm thinking about how I would look at it then, I can't even imagine being in that position. I think it's incredible you did that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was really challenging, but I just wanted the facts to speak for themselves. You know, I know that when you listen to a family member tell a story, it can seem really biased. And in some cases, they are really biased. And I never wanted to come across that way. So there were so many things that I could have put into that podcast, my own feelings, my own emotions, but I really tried not to do that. And, you know, the whole podcast was made in mind, or with the idea, I should say, that I believe that there would be a resolution, that there would be a trial eventually. So I basically just took this real audio and these court records and created a podcast. I tried to not insert myself as much as possible, which was extremely difficult because it is my life and it is my sister. But, you know, I ultimately really always believed that this would go to court. I mean, I wouldn't have made the podcast otherwise. So it was designed with all of that in mind. There's so much I still want to say and I still want to tell about my family. But now with all the legal proceedings happening, I really had to stay quiet. So it's amazing how much is out there, but how much I feel is still not out there at the same time.
Well, time will come for sure. What about influences? Because I can think of one really big one in the podcast world that kind of would have like got your brain going, like made you even think like this is a possibility to do a podcast like this. I think of something like Serial, right? And like the impact that it had. Were you a listener of that? And that was kind of like planted the seed, or was there anything else that did?
So the very first podcast I ever listened to was actually Missing Maura Murray. Yeah, I mean, I remember sitting there, you know, before work, sitting at my vanity, getting ready and just crying and being like, oh my gosh, I wish there was something like this out there for my sister. But once I did make the podcast, I absolutely got inspiration from Serial. I love the way that it was told, as well as the podcast S-Town. I think S-Town is one of the best podcasts that I've ever listened to. And it was just that kind of that style that really drove me. So yeah, I would say that they were definitely all an inspiration to me.
In the true crime genre, were you interested in it before all this? I know growing up, I was always, and I always have been interested in it. You obviously have a really sincere reason to be, but before were you, you know, did you watch it on television? Did you watch documentaries? You just talked about the podcast you listened to before, but does it go back even years before that?
I just never really liked true crime, to be honest. I was never into it. I never found stories that spoke to me. Not until really the police told me to get media and I started diving into that. I was never a watcher of, you know, America's Most Wanted or I can't even think of these shows now. I was never a Law and Order person.
Unsolved Mysteries. Never, ever.
Which is so funny. I really always loved true stories. Like nonfiction has always been my jam when it comes to books, or I always loved documentaries, but in terms of the crime space, I was never interested until I kind of had to be.
What are some other influences from content creation that you can think of? Even like your childhood, because I mean, I've got a million things, but I have a history in radio as well. So that kind of like is one of mine.
Fair enough. you know, I think a lot of my inspiration kind of comes from like old school journalism, if you will. Like the way that I always thought a journalist should act is that person who is like, I don't care, I'm going to hop the fence to get the story. I don't care if I'm going to, you know, piss off this politician, I'm going to tell the truth. That was kind of my inspiration, as crazy as that sounds, is that's how I always thought that these cases should be told. Of course, you never want to jeopardize a story. You don't really want to break the law, but you know, it's about going above and beyond to tell the truth in these stories and getting something raw and getting something real. It was never about trying to fluff it up or make it wildly entertaining. It was about kind of shocking people with the facts. So I think just really that old school journalism, which might actually come from fiction, right? Like the first thing that comes to my mind is like Lana Winters from American Horror Story going into the asylum and, you know, becoming one of the patients, essentially. It's just going above and beyond to get the story and not just regurgitating what's already out there. So I don't know. I guess that real raw journalism. And fun fact, I actually was supposed to be a journalist. I went to school for it. And then when I encountered a real journalist in my real life telling my story, I changed my path and said I could never do that.
Just because of the experience?
Yeah, it was such a horrible experience that I was like, I could never do that to people. And I do think that there, you know, there are some constraints with traditional journalism that constrict the way that I would like to tell a story.
That's a difficult field for sure. So you talked about on your podcast early on that you actually quit high school and did not go the traditional route with that either.
Yeah, I'm a high school dropout. I missed a lot of school growing up, actually. It wasn't like starting in fourth grade, I basically had the option to go to school or not. And I mean, when you're eight and you're being asked, do you want to go to school? The answer is no, I want to stay home and watch The Price is Right. It was just very much how I grew up. So by the time I got to high school, you know, it was the second day, maybe the first day of senior year in high school. And my dad came in my room and said, if you're not going to go to school, why don't you just drop out? And I said, okay, let's do it. And he drove me down there and I dropped out of school. I got my GED, I think like a month later. And then the next semester I was enrolled in college. But the whole thing with me dropping out was I knew I wanted to go to college. And that was always in the forefront of my mind was who cares if I have a high school diploma, if I have a college degree. So I did eventually end up graduating from ASU, actually pretty much at the top of my class. So I was super proud of that, debt-free, all by myself. It was a crazy hard journey.
The reason I bring it up because it's inspirational, because throughout your life, you've continuously had to like find that drive from within for yourself because you may not have had it at home. So in your podcast, you talk about how your dad was your best friend. Maybe not the best parental character, like you just said, he kind of left that option for you to, you know, attending school or not. You've continuously, though, had to find something else to that's not traditional per se or a normal path of a person to help drive you. That's definitely probably helped make you who you are.
Absolutely. I mean, I never really had anybody pushing me to do anything. I always did it myself. And it continues to be that way to this day. And I mean, as much as I would have loved to have, you know, crazy, supportive, loving parents, I feel very grateful that I'm so strong and independent because I don't think I would have made it to where I have today without that inner drive and that inner strength. I mean, it's a long, complicated story as most things are, but you know, I grew up in West Phoenix and I saw a lot of friends, you know, die from drug overdoses. I saw a lot of friends drop out of school and never go back. You know, I still see friends battling with addiction in and out of jail. It's just my reality growing up. So for me, you know, education and doing well in my career was my way out of that. It was my way to kind of beat those statistics.
And when you have a podcast like yours, you aired everything out there, not just about your father or your sister, or your family or other individuals, also yourself. Admittedly so, I'm not a perfect person.
Yeah, I certainly tried to be as honest as possible. I didn't reveal absolutely everything about myself. There's still a lot that people don't know, and I'm not sure they ever will know. Despite me putting everything kind of out there, there's this whole side of me that's extremely private. You know, there's so many things I don't talk about. So it was extremely difficult for me, but I knew that I had to be completely honest in that podcast. And there were things that I felt like I needed to acknowledge and kind of just, you know, address the elephant in the room. I feel like I like to beat people to the punch that way. I'm not a perfect person. Here's what happened. And I don't know, it just seemed really fair. You know what I mean? I had to kind of put everything out there, not just what I wanted to pick and choose. It had to be the truth of the situation.
And we were talking before we hit the record button, I guess you could say. On this project, I haven't even really told anybody my last name or anything, but I admire the fact that you tell people a large portion of things. It's like the exact opposite. And I think that's what makes it really real, though. I mean, every situation is different. But for yours, it was important to do something like that. You're right.
Yeah, I can't shy away from the facts. You know, nothing's perfect. And a big part of it, too, was like I was looking for people to see other things that I didn't see. And that can't happen if I'm not being truthful, you know.
I don't want to make this conversation really, you know, emotionally sad. I am an emotional guy, admittedly. So another part of your life has been you've been inspired by somebody who has not been alive for two decades now. I can't even fathom the thought of that. How crazy is it? And it doesn't seem crazy to you, but I mean, if you were in my shoes, if you can even imagine being thinking about how one of the biggest influences of your life is somebody that you did not get to spend that much of your life with, in far as how long, you know, the individual lives. That makes sense what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I get it. You know, over the years, I've been told several times, you know, move on. What's the point? What are you really going to do? You might as well be happy. She would want you to be happy. And all that's absolutely true. You know what I mean? It's, she would want me to be happy. And this is how I'm happy. I think for me, grieving my sister was working for her. I think that, you know, and I've always been this way. It's like, if you're sad about something, you take your time and you be sad about it. That's fine. I'm not shaming anybody who is sad or, you know, grieves over a missing loved one. But at a certain point, you know, I think that it's healthy to make a decision and say, okay, am I going to be sad about this forever and wallow? Am I going to move on? Or am I going to actively do something to try to change it? And for me, actively trying to do something to change it felt the best for me. And then over time, as I realized that my sister's story was helping other people, it was like, that was it for me. I can't think of a better legacy than that. I mean, who wants their loved one to be forgotten? If you have a choice, your missing 17-year-old sister who was just a kid can either disappear into oblivion or she can go on to continue to help people. For me, it was an easy choice.
Absolutely. And I say it in the most positive way. It's just, I think if somebody's not in a situation, they can't imagine it. So you have that self-drive and determination like we talked about, but a large portion of it is from her.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Alyssa wasn't just my sister. She was basically the only parent I ever had. She was everything to me. She's who I went to for advice. She taught me how to do laundry, how to do the dishes. She told me I looked stupid when I was wearing all yellow trying to go to the skating rink. I didn't really have many other people in my life. And I don't know, it was only 12 years of my life. But, you know, in my mind, she was just a kid. And who doesn't want to help that? I get why people don't understand it. And honestly, I hope they don't. And I'm glad they don't. I hope as few people as possible can truly understand what something like this is like.
Sarah, you talk about the skating ring that took me back to the day in my memories. They still have those out there in Arizona?
I think so. I think the skating rink we used to go to is still around. It's called Great Skate.
We go there
all the time. Super cheap, super fun.
That and going to the movie theater were big part of, you know, early adolescence.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I love that. The Dollar Theater, we'd go there all the time. Mm-hmm. We'd go underneath these tunnels underneath the freeway. Alyssa made me so brave. Like by the time I was 9 or whatever, I was running the streets with her, and it was a pretty cool experience. But it was also the 90s, you know, things were different.
Oh, you're absolutely right. It didn't seem like we had all these different platforms and outlets to hear about these things either. So some, you really just heard about them from the television, maybe some radio, you know, but back then, you know, the internet wasn't near, it's just really getting going. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, back then it was like a 1 minute spot on the local news or whatever, if you were lucky.
A lot of my audience is content creators. How difficult is it and how personal do you take criticism of your content? Because for me, right, it's just my content. But for you, it's your life. I'm sure you see a lot of reviews and things. How do you deal with that? Is that hard?
Honestly, it's not really hard. I do feel blessed. I feel like most people are extremely kind to me. There have been some horror stories about people being awful, but those are kind of outliers. You know, for me, it's like a numbers game. I mean, when you get millions of downloads or whatever, there's going to be people who don't like you. When you're, you know, featured in these big publications, there's going to be people who don't like you. It just is what it is. You can't win everybody. But I do love constructive criticism. I mean, I've learned some good things, and I certainly take that constructive criticism, you know, when it is constructive, and I try to apply it. There's certainly things that I don't see about myself that others do that I think can be really valuable. So no, I don't think the criticism really hurts me or affects me. I think what hurts me more is when people are just insensitive to victims. That's kind of when I write back, when maybe sometimes I shouldn't. I try to come from a place of education and understanding, but it's hard for me. It's hard for me to see victims be kind of bashed online. I think it definitely triggers me. And that's not really because I saw that with my sister's case. It's just, I don't know. I'm really defensive of these families. So overall, criticism of me, fine. Criticism of other families, I get a little more sensitive about.
I'm proud to announce that the podcast father, myself, Jeff, and Podpage are teaming up for this sponsorship. Podpage is great, guys. Like I was telling you earlier, it is so critical to have an actual podcast website. I know the link trees are used a lot, but you need an actual website. You need something that's going to show up in Google. You need something that's going to show some hits, a trail that will lead to your podcast. And there's not a better way to do it than Podpage. You can build a beautiful podcast website in 5 minutes. Automatically create a listener-friendly podcast site from your RSS feed. Customize the design to create a professional look you'll be proud of in just a few clicks. There is no coding or technical knowledge necessary. There's a free trial to give this a shot, and there's different packages ranging from free to all the goods and gadgets, but still at affordable prices. Podpage is big supporters of indie podcasts, so make sure you support them also. Go on podpage.com and get your podcast website set up. With that being said, we will roll into this segment sponsored by Podpage, where we will play a trailer from a different indie podcast every episode. I hope you enjoy it and give them a listen after you're done listening to my show. Then afterwards, we'll jump back into the interview.
Hi, everybody. My name is Jack.
And my name's Colin. And together, we host the podcast Wrong Term Memory.
We are a couple of guys from Scotland who are into our second season at the moment, and we are taking a not too serious look at some pretty serious crime.
Yeah, but don't expect anything like Serial or Case File or anything like that. We're more interested in your nutters that like to eat people's feet and keep their penises in the fridge. We do try and find the funny side to these sorts of stories.
You will find our podcast anywhere that you would expect to find a podcast, and it is free.
And you can find it every single Monday, because that's when our shows drop.
Go to wrongtermmemory.com and you'll find us there.
So you are a really good example of how to take something like, and Brett from the Prosecutor's Pod talked about this on his interview. He credited you with the amazing things you've done with TikTok. I mean, I talked to a lot of people that can't figure out how to break into that. A lot of podcasters really struggle with that. How did that come about for you? That's just because it's even hard for people that do very well on podcasting to, like, I want to say catch fire on there, but see success with it.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, you kind of have to be open to it. And you have to adapt your content for TikTok. TikTok is unlike any other social media platform. And when I say adapt your content, I don't mean you need to go on there and dance. I don't think I've ever danced on TikTok, to be honest. I was just on there and I jumped on the trends, which is huge for TikTok. You have to use the trending sounds. You can't just necessarily use whatever you want and expect to go viral. And it's just about creating compelling content. And for whatever reason, when I started posting about Alyssa, it just caught fire. People just really, really cared. And I think I came in at a really unique time in TikTok too. I remember just searching like the hashtag true crime and there was almost nothing. And in my head, you know, I worked in marketing and events and social media in a past life, if you will. And I was like, wow, there's a market for true crime on TikTok and nobody is doing it. I mean, there were a few, don't get me wrong. I certainly wasn't the first true crime person on TikTok ever, but there was a big market for it and nobody seemed to care. Nobody seemed to notice. And in fact, when I first started TikTok, I can't tell you how many people told me that I was stupid, that I was crazy, that it wasn't worth my time. And it has by far been the best piece of marketing, the best platform to market my podcast. I mean, overall, I'd say a few months into TikTok, I had more impressions on my sister's story than in years of working on Facebook, working with another podcast, working on Twitter, working on Instagram. TikTok did it all in just a few months. So, you know, for other creators, I'd say just kind of fall into it. It was super embarrassing. My first video, I was like mortified. I was so embarrassed. I was like, this is so stupid. Nobody's gonna like this. But I did it for my sister and it worked out. And it's like, you just have to be silly and realize that it's not a platform where people like to see you polished. Like TikTok is so real. They'd rather see you being a real person without makeup in your real house. It's not like Instagram where they expect you to be perfect. TikTok's about being real. And if you can embrace that and kind of ride the trends and the sounds, I think you have a better chance of success than just trying to, you know, repost your old content on there.
I'm glad I brought that up because I hear a lot of people that struggle with TikTok and break it into that from the content creating world. And I really wanted to bring that up and just to hear your advice for them, because I think I have like an old school mindset, right? Where I'll be like, hey, you need a website. You need to be able, you know, to improve SEO. You need to be able to have like a digital trail. All that stuff is very important. But for me, it, like you said, you have to adapt to what's going on and other tools and resources that are available for you as a content creator. And Brett was absolutely right. He hit the hammer on the nail. You are that with TikTok and in the true crime world.
Oh, that was really sweet of him to say. I don't know how to operate in any other way than just being authentic. I don't know if it's like trauma memory or whatever it is. I just am an extremely blunt, honest person. And that seems to work for TikTok. But yeah, I mean, if you're on there putting a slideshow you put on Facebook with some random song behind it, you're not going to get any views. It's just, you gotta fall into it. You gotta be silly for it. That's what people want. I mean, think about what you'd want on there. And yeah, I can't hype up TikTok enough. You'd swear that they were paying me or something, but like you see celebrities on there too. It's there's no other platform like that. I mean, you have Drew Barrymore on there making silly videos. Rosie O'Donnell follows me. That does not happen on other platforms. So yeah, I wish more creators would just get on the TikTok wave. It's just like any other social media platform. I don't know what the hesitation is, man.
So you see it too. I'm not just crazy. So yeah, I'll send everybody your way along with myself to seek advice for TikTok.
Oh, perfect. Well, if you look too, like look at the families on there. Look at Alicia Navarro's been missing. Actually, today is the 2-year anniversary of her going missing. And her mom has, I think, like 500,000 followers on there. Like there is no better platform for advocacy, and the social algorithm inside of TikTok almost works like a slot machine. It is designed to be addicting. This is probably why they don't sponsor me, but it's designed to keep you coming back. So it's like, oh, slot machine, whoop, went viral. Okay. A few more videos, not viral. Oh, viral again. It's designed to keep you coming back. So like use that in your favor. I mean, use it for what it's worth. It is there. And there are so many people that find success through it. I just, again, they should pay me.
They should. I will I will start a riot for you. That Alicia, that was a great episode of yours, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's a case that's local to me and means a lot to me. I talk to her mom all the time. I've been to a few of her vigils. It's a 14-year-old girl goes missing. How do you not want to help?
Let's deep dive into your podcast a little bit more. Talk to me about how some of the technical things that you went through just launching the podcast. Was there immediately a pitch to anybody to help you with it? Or was this a solo act for you? Or how did the origins and beginning happen of it? I mean, we know we covered the backstory, but how did it actually come together?
Yeah. So, I mean, I do have to give credit to Justin from Mysterious Circumstances, who was a great friend of mine at that time. He helped me, you know, pick out my microphone and said, you know, this one's fine. This is all you need. He helped me at 1 a.m. when I was like, I can't get my Apple cover art to work. It's not the right dimensions. I don't know what's happening. I don't understand. He's like, just send it to me. Stop panicking. I certainly had some help along the way, but, you know, a lot of it was also YouTube videos. You know, that's how I learned how to edit. That's how I learned what was kind of compatible, how I learned to do certain things, how to avoid certain things. YouTube is an amazing teacher for almost anything, but it helped me so much. But I mean, I started Voices for Justice in my closet. I was on like a folding chair with like one of those IKEA, I'm like looking at it now because I finally moved it to my office, but you know, like an IKEA set of drawers. And I would set the world's worst laptop, I called it, because it was so slow and so terrible. Set it up on a bunch of shoe boxes to, you know, negate the feedback from the microphone. And for like $100, I started the podcast in my closet and I just kind of went. I learned a lot as I went along. I think a lot of podcasters can kind of sympathize with that your first episodes are kind of mortifying to listen to now. But I still learn every day. Like by no means do I feel like I am a professional just yet. I am lucky. I get a lot of compliments on how good my audio is, but I also like the meticulous editing that went into those first few episodes to make sure that happened was insane. So, I mean, I tried to learn everything I could on my own because I didn't have any services. I didn't have any money to hire anybody to help me. And I absolutely refused to take free work. It's just something I've always been against. So yeah, $100, a lot of YouTube videos and a lot of hard work.
That's why I bring that up, Sarah, because I wanted to highlight, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with this, but no production company off the bat or anything. A lot of people that, and a couple of different, I want to say true crime podcasts, but missing person podcasts and things like that, they were able to get a and work with the production company. But for you, you just using the resources you had, a friend and whatever resources you could find on the internet to actually educate yourself.
Oh, yeah. No. And Voices for Justice is still 100% solo. I still do absolutely everything by myself. I did partner with another podcast early on. And I remember I was like, hey, I have a promo swap for you. And she was like, sorry. Like, my editor is at, I forget, the editor couldn't do it or whatever. And I was like, we're going to miss the slot. And she's like, those are the breaks. And I was like, nope, those are not the breaks. And that's how I learned how to edit. I was like, I'm going to learn how to edit right now. So we're going to get this ad slot. And you got to make it happen. If you sit around and wait for everything to be perfect to make your podcast, it will never come out. You just have to jump in there and do your best and work your ass off and hope that people like it.
How has your podcast changed from, and I know the obvious way how it's changed from the beginning to now. For an extended amount of time, you obviously covered just your situation going on with your sister's case. But then was it the start this year where you branched off into other cases?
Yeah. So funny story is when I first wanted to make Voices for Justice, I just wanted to make a podcast helping other people because so many people had helped me. And then I was like, wait, I should probably do a first season on my sister. So I've always wanted to help other people. But this year, you know, I started covering other cases because the arrest was made and I completely stopped all my episodes on my sister, for the good of the case. But yeah, I couldn't not use this platform that I built up to not help other people. You know, if I would have waited a few years until after the trial, all that hype would have died down. And I want to use that hype for these other cases. So yeah, starting this year, I started formally covering other cases on Voices for Justice, but I'd been sharing them on social media and my Patreon for quite some time before that.
I'm going to go back a little bit and ask you more questions about the timeline and success, but you talked about Patreon. I saw a post you made a little while back about you're no longer going to put missing person cases on there because of, I'll just say the inner struggle that you have with doing something like that. And I can't even imagine having a podcast like yours and trying to do something like that. So I thought it was super cool when you said that.
Well, thanks. Yeah. So I started creating monthly minisodes as bonus content for Patreon. And, you know, while I was still covering my sister's case, it was a way to talk about these other cases that needed help. And it made the most sense because the main feed was all about my sister. It didn't make sense to put other cases on there. So I was like, I'll cover it on Patreon as a way to help. And then, you know, I started covering other cases this year. I was a few months in and I was like, this doesn't feel good anymore. I don't feel good about putting unsolved cases behind a paywall. People need to hear these stories. It shouldn't be gated even by, you know, $5 or whatever it is for my Patreon. It just started to feel really wrong. So that's what I told my audience. You know, I went on there and said, I'm not going to put these unsolved minisodes on here anymore. I'm going to replace it with new content, educational content that I think you guys will really enjoy. But yeah, it just doesn't feel right for me to put unsolved cases behind a paywall. It just made me feel dirty. So I told them, I said, anybody wants a refund, go. I'm happy to give it to you, but I have to live with myself in this field. You know what I mean?
I absolutely do. I mean, my podcast is nowhere near yours, and I had weighed my options with that. And I struggled with it because I thought I do have some extra content recorded, right, with some artists. They may not be podcasters and the episodes I've released of them may not have near the downloads of my episodes that I have with, you know, actual content, audio content creators, but they were very passionate about the interview and the interviews were great. So I thought to myself, like, I'm really going to struggle to put something like this, like behind a paywall, like you said. So I just didn't do it because I feel like as a listener, you could get just as much from them as you could a podcaster because I mean, they're creating things.
Yeah. It's hard and it's a hard balance. Most people do put, you know, a lot of their best stuff behind paywalls. And I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm not saying it's not a great idea. I mean, the thing about Patreon is I like to use a lot of the Patreon funds to help these other families. So that was also my struggle was like, I really want this income so I can continue to help them in the ways that I enjoy helping them. But, you know, you have to do what feels right. And, you know, it's with independent content creation, it's so different than being like a, you know, part of a syndicate or being a journalist or whatever, because that's your name, man. That's your legacy. You're not just somebody from ABC News or from a TV show. Your name is your brand. So, yeah, I mean, you have to do what makes you feel right. And for me, that's what feels right.
Going back to the podcast a little bit more, like how long did it take before you thought like, man, this is really catching fire? I know you did a lot of work, like we said, on social media part and very innovative, but how long did it take before you thought like, I'm really onto something here and I can make it not only like do more of this, but I can actually make a difference doing this?
It's hard to say because, to be honest, I never looked at my numbers. I purposely didn't look at my download numbers. I didn't want to discourage myself. I was 100% sure that no one would listen to my stupid podcast. So I just kept making them and hope for the best. But I think like as I saw the podcast rise in the charts, that's when I was like, holy crap, people are listening. People care. And as I started getting messages from people saying, your sister's story inspired me to do A, B, and C. It inspired me to get my sister out of a bad situation. It inspired me to leave a bad situation. That's when I was like, oh my gosh, like this is something that can help people. This is something that is already helping people. And I think that's when I knew that I was in this for the long run. You know, like I said, I was in events and marketing and social media, and a lot of that was in nonprofit. I've always wanted to help people, but I've never been able to do it in such a direct, tangible way. So once I started getting all those messages and seeing posts about it and seeing it rise in the charts, I was like, this is something. I think I'm doing something that not a lot of people do, and it's affecting people. So it was, I think it was a combination of all of that.
Yeah. Talk to me about the engagement piece of it, because that's absolutely critical for a content creator, the engagement piece. What advice do you have for content creators there? Obviously, your situation is like really real, raw, organic, but how critical has the engagement piece been for you with your listeners?
Yeah, I mean, engaging with my audience was absolutely everything, even before having the podcast. I mean, I would spend hours, I would spend my lunch break, I would spend my restroom breaks, you know, responding to messages from people. I wanted to make sure that every person who reached out to me or left a comment knew how grateful I was that they cared about my sister, because that's how I truly felt. You know, I didn't have really anyone in my real life that supported what I was doing. I mean, of course, friends and significant other or whatever, but my family never backed what I was doing. So I was like, wow, these complete strangers actually care enough to comment. They care enough to share. They care enough to take a second out of their day to care about my sister. So in the beginning, you know, I responded to each and every person, and that took, you know, at a certain point, hours every single day. And yeah, I mean, I have to say that I truly think that engaging with my audience on that level has helped me a lot. One of the things that the feedback I get is like, you're so real and authentic. And it's like, all you have to do is talk to your audience. You know what I mean? You have to just show them that you're grateful, because at the end of the day, there's not a content creator out there that would be where they are without their audience. I don't care how big you are. I don't care how small you are. You would be nothing without that audience. So don't disrespect them. Respond to them. Like, I get it. Obviously, I can't respond to every single person anymore, but I still try to respond as much as possible, because I will never forget that those are the people that put me where I am today. Yeah, it was a lot of hard work, but if they didn't see that hard work, they didn't comment on it, they didn't share it, they didn't download it, I wouldn't be here without them. No one would be here without their audience. And I wish more creators would realize that and think that way.
I obviously have been in a different situation than you, but getting into content creating, you know, what feels like forever ago, going back to starting at 2005 with a website, and then I was able to connect that to MySpace and got over 1 million views on my work there. And when I give people advice, because I do talk to a lot of people every day, a lot of podcasters, I say exactly what you said. Try to reply and engage with everybody that says something to you. Try to answer all of them, you know, engage with all of them, react to all of them as much as you can. It'll make a huge difference. Don't let one comment go unanswered if you can help it.
Yeah. And earn that success every day. I don't care how many millions of followers you have to earn that every single day. Because I see creators who fall off every single day because they take it for granted. I think that's another like pet peeve of mine is like, just love on your audience. They're why you're successful. They're why you're making money. Like, don't be disrespectful.
You're a great conversation to have that with, because you do that. And I can see your conversations you have with people. And that is absolutely key. I think one of the challenges though is, and that people have, is in the beginning, figuring out how to engage with people to build an audience in the beginning. That really is a challenge.
Oh yeah. I mean, I started from scratch. I had zero Instagram followers. I had zero social media presence, you know, before my sister. I just didn't care. I was never that person. I had massive social anxiety and hated being online, hated pictures of myself, all that. But you just have to start somewhere. And even if that's just thank you with a heart, that could mean, you know, the world to somebody. Just getting that response can, you know, change their whole day. And if you can do that, like, why not do it? It takes literally 1 second. You can take 5 minutes out of your day to respond to some messages and you might just, you know, make their day. And especially in the beginning, just talk to them like normal people, you know?
Community is very important. Another thing that you did is engage with other scenarios that were similar to yours in the community and be an advocate for that as well.
Yeah, I think that just kind of came along naturally as I began talking to other families and just genuinely making friendships with them. I just care. So when I see it, I fight for it. Like today, you know, I shared Alicia Navarro's stuff all over. I was talking to some people in the comments in our local news here, and I just can't help it. It's just because I've genuinely formed bonds with these people, you know, like Kelsey German from, you know, the Delphi murders. It's, you know, I will always fight for her and fight for her narrative because it's, how can you not? It's such a unique situation that only a few people can understand. So when you meet people who get it, you just connect. And, you know, I think we bond over trauma, and I don't know, I guess I stand up for them like anybody would stand up for their friends.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys are a community and you stick together.
Yeah, we try to.
Talk to us about this big announcement that came out recently and what you're involved in now, because this was really cool.
Yeah, I started a second podcast. It's called Disappearances, and it's, you know, with Spotify and Parcast. So now I have a second podcast with an entire team behind me, which is very new and very exciting. And we just launched our first episode last week. So it's still very, very new, but yeah, very exciting.
I enjoyed that first episode. How is it working with a team? It's been, as we talked about, you've been pulling a lot of the load with a little bit of help, but how has that changed? What's that like?
Yeah, it's totally different. And I think that's why it appealed so much to me. You know, I know how to make a podcast. I know how to make something that I am in total control of, but I wanted to work with a team and see what we could do together. I wanted to get their ideas and their input and obviously their assistance and see how we can create something totally different from Voices for Justice, something with, you know, a just different production value and different, really, like frame of mind. It's just, it's very different. And they opened my mind to things that I would never see otherwise. So it's been a great experience. Honestly, I was super nervous to like give up any control just because I have been solo for so long, but it has been absolutely amazing. So, I mean, you can't get more top tier than Spotify and Parcast. And when they approached me, my goodness, over a year ago about doing something together, it's like, how could I not take their experience, their resources, and their time and help these other families? It was something I knew I wanted to do immediately. And it's been honestly just a great experience. And I'm super excited to see what I can do with them.
That was kind of like the next level for you with what you're doing. What are some things from the podcasting side that you've learned already in your, you know, you haven't been with them forever by any means, but you talked about some things that you picked up, you know, right off the bat and you've learned as far as, you know, putting a podcast together goes.
Yeah. I mean, definitely some editing tricks. Definitely some like techie gear stuff I learned about, which is super interesting. You know, they kind of got me away from using one certain mic and I experimented with some different mics and, you know, overall it just really opened my mind. And that's what I was looking for. Like I am someone who loves to learn and grow. I think that there is not a perfect human on this planet. I think that everybody should be striving to learn and grow and evolve with this ever-evolving world. So, I mean, I think it just really opened me up to other ways of thinking. And we go back and forth all the time and talk about ideas. And it's just, it's just that other perspective, I think, is what I've learned the most. And just, yeah, I think collaboration and being open to all that. It's hard to pinpoint one specific thing, but I love collaborating with other creators and other, I shouldn't say creators because I guess I'm the only creator on there, but I love collaborating with other people and getting their ideas. And I think that that's been kind of the best experience of it.
If you could give advice to somebody starting out in, you know, their content creating journey, or maybe going through a rough patch, what would it be? I know we've covered a lot so far, but what would it be for you? The most important advice you could give a content creator?
Stay consistent. You know what I mean? If you tell your audience that you're going to have a new episode every Thursday, do everything in your power to make that happen. I think people understand about life, but there's something about having your favorite podcast always being there, no matter what. And the thing is, people fall in love with personalities. They fall in love with these hosts. They'll forgive you if, you know, you have a bad audio week or whatever. If you say, oh my gosh, I don't know what happened to this episode. I'm so sorry that there's static here or whatever. They'll forgive you, but show up for them and be consistent through the bad times and through the good. And my gosh, just be honest with your audience, because they will see right through you if you lie or try to pretend that you are something you aren't.
You were very honest with the air conditioner fiasco.
I was. Oh my gosh, that was the worst time of my life, I swear. People were like, I had people who were like, I'll buy you a new air conditioner. And I was like, stop, get out of here. People understand, life happens. But I was like literally beside myself when that is the first time I ever missed an episode, because I was literally sitting in my office. My home was 100 degrees. I was sweating like crazy and my brain was melting. And I had my episode put together and I was like, this is not my best work. This is not my best work. And this is not fair to the victim. So despite having gone through, you know, legal proceedings with my father, despite going through some horrific traumatic experiences, I always had my episodes every single Thursday or every other Thursday when I was on a biweekly schedule. I never missed an episode until this stupid air conditioner. I felt so defeated and so sad. And I literally, like, people were like, you sound so sad saying that you can't put out an episode. Like, Sarah, it's totally fine. But like, to this day, I kind of don't forgive myself. It's just, it was so disappointing for me that something like a stupid air conditioner could have put me out of commission like that. But these things happen. And luckily, you know, my transparency paid off and nobody blamed that. I took it worse than any person on this planet.
I feel like I completely understand where you're coming from, because I could see where like that would like really upset me too. But if you're not a person that's creating content and putting it out there, you probably just think like, what the hell? That's who cares? It's not a big deal. But for us it is. And that was a really good example of when you're just completely honest, even though it was something like an air conditioner that prevented you from putting out the best content possible. And for the first time you had to say, hey, you know, I need this week to get some things taken care of. That was incredible.
Yeah. Fun fact. I just kept recording in the heat after and just made it happen. It didn't even get fixed after that for like so long. But like for me, the thing is, every single week is a slot for a person's story to be told. And that's what broke my heart. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, oh man, I'm going to, you know, miss this episode or whatever. It was like, this is somebody's slot. I have made a promise to these people that every week they will hear, you know, a story or a continuance of a story from last week, whatever it is, there will be a slot for someone on this show. And there wasn't that week. And it just, I don't know, it just broke my heart. It feels like a missed opportunity to help somebody.
How do you stay positive when you're dealing with some things that can be so negative and have such a bad impact on people's lives? Do you just really have to constantly remind yourself it's for the greater good? Because you are doing something that really could like consume you and destroy you if you're not careful, if that makes sense, depending on how you handle it.
For me, it's like I've gone through so much in my life that I've succumbed to the fact that you can only control what you can control. And after, you know, fighting with this air conditioning company or whatever for forever, I couldn't control it anymore. I could only do what I could do. In terms of staying positive, just control what you can and do what you can to make it happen and make peace with everything else. And, you know, to be honest, I feel like I'm very blessed in that I do have this like never ending optimism in the back of my head. Like, it's not a lie. It's not an act. Like, I truly have hope for all these cases I talk about. I have hope for most situations. I mean, you could see me on podcasts, you know, talking about Lori Vallow and being like, I don't know, the kids could still be alive. Like, I just have that never ending hope because crazy things in this world happen. There's a lot of terrible things, but there's also a lot of crazy, unexpected things that almost seem like miracles. So it's, it's a combination of only being able to control what you can and just hoping for the best. It's, you know, I've always lived that motto, you know, plan for the worst and hope for the best. It's really all you can do.
I really appreciate you doing this interview, this having this conversation with me this evening. I think you're a great example of, you know, how a content creator should be, and more importantly, a great person. So I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me today.
Oh, thank you. No, it's my pleasure.
Really do appreciate you listening to this episode and checking it out. I hope you continue to do so with the next. I hope you have an appreciation for what I'm trying to do here. Highlight all the different things all sorts of different creators are doing. I hope you get behind me on that and continue to join me on my journey. I'm Podcast Father, the Indie Podcaster. See you next time.